It's a Central Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. This year, the going rate for a 30-second Super Bowl ad is $4.5 million. With so much money on the line, which advertising strategies are the most effective? How are advertisers changing tactics to get people's attention? And which ads are the winners and losers and why? I'm joined now by phone by Bob Gilbert. He's an associate professor of marketing at the University of Pittsburgh's Katz School of Business. Bob Gilbert, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Thank you very much. Glad to be here.
With so much at stake as advertisers try to get their money's worth from these Super Bowl ads, which strategies are the most effective?
Well, you know, that's a difficult question to pinpoint. You know, ultimately, any advertiser's strategy needs to be evaluated against what their objectives are for the ad in the first place. Clearly, though, over time, what brands have done and used the Super Bowl for is to either reinforce or register an emotional connection with the brand. Okay? And so there's a lot of devices or tactics that get used. There's a great use of humor, provocation, tugging on people's emotional heartstrings. But they're trying to create a connection with the brand because it's a once-in-a-year opportunity given the size of the audience.
When did the Super Bowl, I mean, for a long time now, they've charged a lot of money for a Super Bowl ad, the networks have.
Right.
But, you know, what you used to see decades ago, for those of us who remember, is you'd see an ad that was an ad that, say, for Coke or for Lay's potato chips, whatever it might be, Heinz ketchup. You'd see an ad that ran at other times in other shows. It was they didn't come up with specific ads made especially for the Super Bowl. When did that trend start? When did the advertisers say, hey, we can make this an event in and of itself by creating commercials especially for the big game?
You know, I don't know if I could tell you exactly when it started. I've seen some data. I think the first 30-second ads for the first Super Bowl were, I don't think they cost $35,000, $50,000, okay? But once the audience for this game grew to the size and scope it's become, now all of a sudden this became as much of an advertising event as it was a football game. And now brands are out there trying to capitalize on the big audience, but in addition to, you know, exposure to that audience, they've got to stand out from the other advertisers in the game. And so it becomes almost a one-upsmanship kind of a thing. And, you know, typically your existing inventory of commercials are not going to get that done. If you're going to invest $4.5 million in an ad in this game, you better be doing something new, unique, different, provocative that's really going to start a conversation about your brand.
So those ads came along, and then when MTV came into existence, media watchers cited a shift in how advertisers were trying to get the attention of a younger ad demo with presumably shorter attention spans.
Right.
Made shorter by the 4 or 5 minute videos that seem to encapsulate the attention span of somebody in the lower or younger end of the coveted 18 to 49 target demographic. Has there been another shift, Bob, with an eye toward appealing to Gen Y or millennials?
Well, I think some of the basic advertising tactics that brands have used, you know, since the beginning of the Super Bowl are still somewhat intact. What we're trying to do is find the right combination of generating awareness and attention, but also generating comprehension. In other words, saying something substantive or informative about the brand. That's hard to do at the same time. I think Super Bowl advertisers have therefore erred on the side of attention. And if you look at a lot of Super Bowl ads, you'll find that you know there's not as much information about the brand as much as there's a statement about the character of the brand. I teach an advertising and promotion class, and here's one of the problems that firms face. Tuesday morning, we'll come into class. The students have an assignment to watch the Super Bowl over the weekend, of course. And what we'll do first is I'll mention a given ad in terms of describing the creative approach used, and I'll ask the students how many people remember seeing that ad. And for the most prominent ads, you know, majority of hands will go up in the air. I'll ask students then, with your hands in the air, how many of you would bet your grade in this class that you could correctly identify the advertiser? Do you think any hands go down?
A lot, I bet.
A lot of them, okay? And then the point is, gee, is that a great return on your $4.5 million investment? You know, arguably not. But, you know, one of the things that's really helped with that is social media. And so the pre- and the post-game exposure that the ads continue to gain has helped mitigate, you know, the fact that our attention spans, particularly, you know, Gen Y attention spans, are so short that sometimes we get the ad and don't get the point.
And, well, and speaking of which, the web hosting company GoDaddy has pulled its latest Super Bowl ad, which featured a lost puppy following a social media backlash. In this ad, the lost puppy returns home only to find that his owners have sold him using a website made with GoDaddy.
Right.
It's supposed to be a parody of the Budweiser ad featuring the unlikely friendship between a lab puppy and a Clydesdale. But
right.
A lot of people did not find this ad funny, including animal rights groups such as the SPCA. There has been a huge social media backlash about this. What is the story behind this? What is going on? A lot of people are asking, what is GoDaddy thinking here?
It's a great question. Frankly, I don't know what they're thinking. I could only speculate. When I look at that situation, I see a firm that's got a history of pushing the edge of the envelope. They've got a history of trying to be provocative. If you think about that combination of awareness and comprehension, their agenda is awareness. You know, their product is not all that complex to understand. What they need to do is get their name out there, right? And so I would guess that they looked at this situation potentially as a win-win. In other words, I'm not willing to contend that the people at GoDaddy were oblivious to the idea that that ad could, you know, strike a nerve. I mean, you practically have to be brain dead to not realize that that could cause a reaction. My hunch is that they stepped back and said, okay, if it does not strike a nerve, then we've got, you know, a really good ad here that is playing off of the equity from the Budweiser approach, and yet continues to, you know, present our brand with a little edginess to it. But if it does cause that reaction, we still win. Because I don't know what the data are, but I suppose certainly you and I imagine many of your listeners, and frankly, those who haven't, maybe now that we're talking about it, the rest will go and look at that ad online. And so, you know, you could argue that the return on their $4.5 million investment has already been realized just because of the pregame publicity from that ad. On top of that, you know, I don't know that anyone wants to label them as good guys, but at least they bowed to the pressure. They admitted, supposedly humbly, that they made a misjudgment, and now they're going to run an alternative ad instead. It's a classic win-win.
Well, and that may be the case. That may have been the strategy that they truly were thinking, this is an ad that can fly on television. But what you hinted at earlier about the idea that they had to know this was going to offend people, there is a school of thought that says, and nobody has really been able to prove this concretely yet, but that this was part of a strategy. We'll put the ad out there. We know what the backlash is going to be. Then we'll do kind of a bait and switch. We'll say, oh, okay, we're going to be good guys here and pull the ad and then replace it with another ad. And what is making people suspicious is that this ad that they are going to run features race car driver Danica Patrick being used once again as a sex symbol. And
right.
it's a pushing the edges, pushing the borders sexy ad that has been their typical ad. So
right.
Do you suspect, Bob, that this might be part of a strategy?
Oh, I don't know, honestly, but I wouldn't find that hard to believe at all. Once again, you know, the way I look at it is they win either way.
What does the future hold? We've watched this evolution of not only of the Super Bowl, but of the hype around it, and of the, you know, it's all about making a buck and the money to be made by the network selling ads and the advertisers cashing in on an ad that they may dole out a lot of money on, but if they do it right, they get a big return on their investment. We've seen adjustments for attention spans for different generations. What do you see coming? What's the next big trend, do you think?
You know, I don't know exactly what that trend would be. There's an interesting relationship between arousal and persuasion. It's not a direct linear relationship. In other words, a stimulus is not likely to be noticed and understood if it's not at all arousing. In other words, if it's boring. And then at the other end of the relationship, it's kind of an inverted U. A stimulus that's too arousing and too, you know, provocative also, you know, fails to get our attention and our comprehension because we, you know, put our hand in front of our eyes because we don't want to look at it. It's just over the line. For my money, advertisers have been on a steady trend towards erring on the side of being too provocative as opposed to not provocative enough, because provocation gets people's attention. What you run into, though, is that fine line out there. No one can predict exactly where it is, where that provocation becomes counterproductive and actually backfires. Now, it's interesting. You know, you talk about the GoDaddy thing. There's a lot of other advertisers on the Super Bowl who wouldn't dream of taking that approach. And a lot of that has to do with the nature of their product and service and the existing profile of their brand. GoDaddy basically, you know, defined itself with its Super Bowl advertising right from the get-go as being provocative and edgy. And I kind of see this as just a continuation of that trend.
Bob Gilbert is Associate Professor of Marketing at the University of Pittsburgh's Katz School of Business, joining us by phone. Bob Gilbert, great thanks.
My pleasure. Hope it was helpful.
It was indeed, sir. Thank you.
Thank you.
Coming up, our sports guy, Bob Dvorak, on Inflategate, and have the Steelers ever been caught cheating? It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA.